Hello. Welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. OpenID is getting a lot of attention over the last week or two. Now at LQ, we're obviously big supporters of both open standards and obviously open source. But this is something a little bit different if you're not familiar with it. And that is, we're also a big believer that you own your identity and also what people are calling your attention data. And we've supported things like FOAF for a long time, really almost since the beginning. And we really do what we can to make a concerted effort to make sure that your data really is yours. While OpenID is not without problems that need to be addressed, I'm happy to announce that soon we'll also be supporting OpenID. I think it's going to be interesting to see how OpenID progresses from here. You know, your quote-unquote login is something that is very important to the big vendors. And by big vendors here, I mean Google and Yahoo and those players. See, once you've signed up for a login, it makes their barrier of entry to get you to try their additional products or projects that much easier. After all you have to do is log into your existing account. And once you have 3 or 4+ services, it's really quite hard to leave a particular site. You're really at that point what they call sticky, and that's what every big vendor really wants. And of course, it's also easier for companies to maintain a unified login like that. And we learned that the hard way, really, at LQ. An example of that is, for a long time, each site we launched had a different unique authentication system. And it was really hard to get people to try, say, LQ Bookmarks when you had to sign up for a distinct account there. After we rolled LQ Bookmarks into the existing main LQ infrastructure and allowed you to use your existing LQ login, usage increased by leaps and bounds. And at this point, really, the only LQ site that has a distinct login is the LQ Wiki. But that's really by design, though. We want the barrier to entry there to be as low as possible, because it is a wiki after all. In that vein of making the barrier to entry for the LQ Wiki as low as possible, that site is going to be the first site that we support OpenID in. That's going to allow us to get a better feel for the technology and implementation, and we'll make further decisions from there about rolling it into the main site. I don't have a solid ETA for this yet, unfortunately, but it should definitely happen this quarter, so stay tuned. A quick update on LQ ISO. The site has now facilitated just shy of 3 million Linux downloads, and with over 400 distribution versions available from well over 700 different mirrors, we hope that iso.linuxquestions.org is the first place you look to download Linux. Now remember, when you go and select a mirror, it's going to use your GeoIP data to give you the mirror that it feels is both fastest and closest to you, but you can pick any mirror. Obviously, first of all, the GeoIP data is not always right. And second of all, we want to give you that flexibility to be able to choose whatever you want. Additionally, we've also recently integrated the new LQ screenshots, which is at shots.linuxquestions.org, into the LQ ISO site. So if you find the site useful, don't forget to mention it to others. Lastly, a reminder that you only have about 2 weeks left to vote in the 2006 LinuxQuestions.org Members' Choice Awards. If you haven't done so yet, head over to www.linuxquestions.org/awards. Now, on to the news. The first story I have is Adobe to release PDF to the ISO. I think it's becoming clear now that the benefits of open standards are starting to be realized in the mainstream. So while the PDF spec has been available for a long time, Adobe is now going to officially submit it as an ISO standard. And here's a quick quote from the press release. Quote, Adobe System Incorporated today announced that it intends to release the full Portable Document Format, PDF, 1.7 specification to AIIM, the Enterprise Content Management Association, for the purpose of publication by the International Organizations for Standardization. PDF has become a de facto global standard for more secure and dependable information exchange since Adobe published the complete PDF specification in 1993. Both government and private industry have come to rely on PDF for the volumes of electronic records that need to be more securely and reliably shared, managed, and in some cases preserved for generations. Since 1995, Adobe has participated in various working groups that develop technical specifications for publication by ISO and worked within the ISO process to deliver specialized subsets of PDF as standards for specific industries and functions. Today, PDF for Archive and PDF for Exchange are ISO standards, and PDF for Engineering and PDF for Universal Access are proposed standards. Additionally, PDF for Healthcare is an AIIM proposed best practice guide. AIIM serves as the administrator for the previous PDF specifications. Today's announcement is the next logical step in the evolution of PDF from de facto standard to a formal de jure standard, said Kevin Lynch, Senior Vice President and Chief Software Architect at Adobe. By releasing the full PDF specification for ISO standardization, we are reinforcing our commitment to openness. As governments and organizations increasingly request open formats, maintenance of the PDF specification by an external and participatory organization will help continue to drive innovation and expand the rich PDF ecosystem that has evolved over the last 15 years. End quote. I think some here would argue that this is coming a little bit late, but I think it's still really good to see this. Especially when they're using words like openness and external and participatory organization, which really is key here. Adobe is finally letting go of one of its crown jewels. And as they mentioned, while the spec has been previously available, licensing restraints mean that we have a ton of free, and free here I mean gratis and libre, viewers, but much less writers. We should see more of a balance now, although it should be noted that there are good libre writing options already. Moving on a little bit to the impetus for this move, I think Adobe has a vision for the future of the web, and it realizes the role open standards will play if they want to be a legitimate player in that future, and they definitely want to be a major player. Also, and as they even mentioned, more and more government agencies are now requiring the document formats that they use be standards-based, and this is definitely rightly so, and this is something I've covered on the podcast numerous times. And of course, once it is accepted as an ISO standard, the full PDF spec can now say that it is fully open. Now on another side, you also have the fact that Microsoft is going to start pushing their XPS, which is XML paper specification, and I think the code name for it was Metro, which is a direct PDF competitor. PDF being an ISO standard means that instead of Adobe being the perceived gatekeeper, anyone can propose additions and modifications. That means an ecosystem can build up here. And of course, Adobe has a ton of expertise built up in this domain, so they will remain the dominant player in here for quite some time to come. And this, I think, will be good for open standards, as it will prove to some skeptics that the value and money aren't created by locking down a spec, but by opening it up. The next story I have is It's All in the Wording. I wonder if any hardware manufacturer will take Greg up on his offer for free Linux driver development. And here's a quote from the post on Greg KH's blog. Yes, that's right. The Linux kernel community is offering all companies free Linux driver development. No longer do you have to suffer through all the different examples in the Linux device driver kit, or pick through the thousands of example drivers in the Linux kernel source tree trying to determine which one is the closest to what you need to do. All that is needed is some kind of specification that describes how your device works, or the email address of an engineer that is willing to answer questions every once in a while. A few sample devices might be good to have so that debugging doesn't have to be done by email, but if necessary, that can be done. In return, you'll receive a complete and working Linux driver that is added to the main Linux kernel source tree. The driver will be written by some of the members of the Linux kernel developer community, over 1,500 strong and growing. This driver will then be automatically included in all Linux distributions, including the quote-unquote enterprise ones. It will be automatically kept up to date and working through all Linux kernel API changes. This driver will work with all of the different CPU types supported by Linux. The largest number of CPU types supported by any operating system ever before in the history of computing. As for support, the driver will be supported through email by the original developers, when they can help out, and by the enterprise Linux distributors as part of their service agreements with their customers. End quote. Now, when worded like that, it's hard to understand why more vendors don't want their drivers in the kernel. We really are talking about no-cost driver development here from that vendor's perspective. What's more, you have people the caliber of Greg doing the work for you. He even addresses using an NDA in his post if you read the full thing. So why the resistance? I'm not exactly sure. I'm sure it's a variety of reasons, but I'd guess it comes down to some mix of fear, perceived lack of control, and general misinformation. Especially in the case of some commodity hardware such as NICs and really anything on board, things of those nature, you should be begging to have Greg write your driver. Not only that, you should really be paying him, but here he is making the offer for free. Now, I kind of understand some fringe cases. If you make some highly specialized piece of $200,000 niche equipment, I can see why you'd want a dedicated team of developers. Your device is almost certainly not mainstream enough, and this is probably sufficiently complicated that you may not find someone willing or even able to maintain your driver in this fashion. But for the rest of you, and the rest I think comprises the vast, vast majority, I'm genuinely interested. So if you're not currently allowing this to happen, what is holding you back and what would change your mind? And if anyone has any feedback or works at a company on or off the record that would like to discuss this, please do contact me. Thanks. The next story I have is Red Hat's volley on Linux management offering. And this is from a recent article at internetnews.com that points to some moves by Red Hat that I think are going to have a pretty large impact on open source and the enterprise. And here's a quote from that article. Quote, the leading Linux distributor told internetnews.com that it is rolling out online monitoring tools this year to Red Hat customers. Rich Friedman, director of product management for the Red Hat Network, told internetnews.com the management tool is already in use with a select group of customers with expanded rollouts planned throughout the year. We provide a set of services that can monitor systems, and we handle the background work for collecting metrics, analyzing them, sending out availability and performance alerts, Friedman said. We provide reporting, charting, and history, and even more capabilities in terms of managing how you set up alerts, and it's from an all-online perspective. What we'll be doing with RHN5 is providing support and capabilities around virtualization management. This includes focusing on what we do from a Red Hat RHEL perspective and the capabilities we have and the ability to control the systems from a central place. Red Hat is taking a different angle than a one-console approach to managing all the enterprise components. One console to serve all purposes is not as important as managing RHEL with the best capabilities, Friedman said. That's where we focus. And it's not just Oracle with which Red Hat wants to contrast its approach. Friedman said Red Hat's goal is to integrate with the big systems management vendors and work with them in a complementary manner. Though Red Hat's goal is not to be like the big systems management vendors, it is pursuing an effort to open up RHN so that it can manage more applications. End quote. From my opinion, this is a really, really smart move. By opening up the infrastructure like this, they're going to be allowing other companies to use it as a framework to build all kinds of compelling applications that can be brought to the market much faster and for much lower costs since they're using that unified framework. And all the while, they'll be cementing themselves as a core piece of the puzzle. And they'll really be adding a ton of value to clients by being able to integrate all these different pieces. And I think Friedman sums it up nicely in the article when he says, quote, he explained that Red Hat is currently working on a platform for systems management that open source projects will be able to leverage to provide systems management out of the box, not to be an OpenView, HP's enterprise management product, or anyone else in that area, but really as a way that you can integrate a base platform and then provide a plugin that will manage your product set. End quote. And it's really that kind of focus, along with an understanding of what their market is and what their core strengths are, that allow Red Hat to do so well. And I, for one, really hope that they're able to continue to execute as they have been recently. And with moves like this, you really think they're going to. And I have to say, well done. The last story I have is MySQL AB, a new product, and an IPO. So while we're speaking of open source companies that understand their market and really understand their core strengths, MySQL AB has just been on a tear recently. Now, earlier this week, the company announced its MySQL Enterprise Unlimited program, and here's a quick snippet from the press release. Quote, MySQL AB, developer of the world's most popular open source database, today unveiled a simpler way for large and growing organizations to acquire and adopt enterprise software. Designed with a customer's perspective in mind, a one-year MySQL Enterprise Unlimited subscription offers a company-wide enterprise site agreement at the unprecedented low price of $40,000, which is 32,000 euro. MySQL Enterprise has made it significantly easier to purchase database software and technical support for our entire organization, said Glenn Bergeron, systems manager for InstaClick Inc., one of the first companies to take advantage of MySQL Enterprise Unlimited. This new offering is ideal for corporate IT organizations with a growing number of projects but a tightly fixed budget. MySQL Enterprise Unlimited is designed for companies with existing site licenses for Oracle, Microsoft SQL Server, Sybase, and IBM DB2. Last year, a survey of the independent Oracle user group showed that a full third of its membership also used MySQL. With a MySQL Enterprise Unlimited subscription, an organization can develop, manage, and fully support any number of MySQL database applications, significantly reducing IT time, cost, and risk. Due in large part to advantages in distribution and volume, open source has the ability to disrupt traditional enterprise software pricing, said Stephen O'Grady, principal analyst for RedMonk. MySQL is attempting to prove as much with its latest site-wide agreements, which offer customers the ability to support every database across their enterprise at a fraction of the traditional cost. End quote. So make no mistake about it here. In my opinion, and I think this opinion would probably be widely shared, MySQL AB could actually have raised the price of their main products and still sold more. Instead, what they've done is chosen a plan that I think has a higher upside potential in the long term. Matt covers some of the reasons the company is able to do this on a post on his blog. Quote, Zach told me over email, in response to my question, how can you possibly make money at that price? The reason we can make money is because, one, the software really works, and two, we don't have expensive Armani-wearing, Ferrari-driving sales reps closing $40,000 deals. End quote. Expanding on that is a post on Zach's blog. This isn't just about Oracle here, in his opinion. It's about disrupting the entire industry. And that's why this is really a long-term play. It's game-changing. A lot of proprietary companies may have raised their rates in a fashion that I mentioned earlier to boost the bottom line in the short term. It's an easy thing to do, and it all looks very nice on the balance sheet. MySQL, however, represents what I consider the future, and they really represent the future of open source companies, and that's vibrant, sustainable companies that treat their customers like partners and not like prey. Additionally, I see that the company is now looking at an IPO. As you may have guessed by my previous comments, it's certainly something that I'll try to get in on. As you also may have guessed, I also regularly recommend and implement MySQL and run it on a site you may have heard of that does get a considerable amount of traffic. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening.